Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. When we last spoke with Andrew Gooley in April, the managing editor of The Strand magazine had just published a never-before-seen short story by F. Scott Fitzgerald, almost 75 years after his death. Now, Gooley and The Strand have done it again with another titan of American literature. A short one-act play called Twixt Cup and Lip appears in the magazine's latest issue. It was written almost 100 years ago by William Faulkner. I asked my colleague Sarah LeDuc to set the scene.
Sitting room in the apartment of a well-to-do bachelor. The walls are straw-colored paneling and narrow black stripes. At the left is a grand piano. Against the wall at left center is a cellarette, on which is a Chinese jade vase. At the back center are folding doors hidden by a brown and dark green curtain. At the right center is a divan of brown and dark green. Behind the divan is a table bearing a lamp with a green shade. There are two or three pictures in narrow black frames on the walls. The entrance is in the right wall, also a fireplace in which a fire burns. The room is empty. Then a voice is heard.
The Strand's Andrew Gooley says, in all likelihood, this is the last unpublished work of William Faulkner's.
This manuscript was at the Albert and Shirley Small Collection in the University of Virginia. And I knew that they had a lot of Faulkner papers. The finding aids were very, very complicated. From a research perspective, if you'll go to a library and you'll see maybe 10 or 20 works on the finding aids by a writer who you're looking to uncover something unpublished, it'll be at least easy because you can catalog things. But with this, there were hundreds and probably thousands of title headings, and this one did not look familiar. So I requested some copies. I read this, and I was very, very impressed that it was a very funny work, a very interesting work by young William Faulkner. And from there, I asked the permission from the literary estate of Faulkner to publish this. And they were very, very wonderful to work with. Lee Kaplan, who was the executor of the estate, was just incredible. It felt like you had a partner to work with.
You mentioned that there are many, many titles. Is this the only Faulkner work that hasn't been published, or are there many more that we maybe haven't seen yet?
You know, Ian, I sifted through everything, and that has been in several reference libraries, several rare books libraries, and I can say that for other writers, there are other stuff that is, that is left, but in terms of William Faulkner, this is it. Everything that has been hiding, that has been lost, has surfaced, has been published, with the exception of this little play.
Give us some context in terms of Faulkner's career for where this fits in.
This was a very, very early work. He wrote it when he was a student at Ole Miss. He was in a time of his life where he had just come home after training in Canada to be an RAF pilot. And the University of Mississippi offered a free education to returning vets. So Faulkner took advantage of that. And he was working with a theater troupe at the university, and they had experimented with various plays. And Faulkner is very, very enthusiastic about working with that group. And he wrote that play during that time. We also know that he was a big admirer of Chekhov. And when he was a student at Old Miss, he read a lot of George Bernard Shaw's plays. So if you look at this play, it has some of Faulkner's sly humor. And at the same time, you can see some influences from playwrights such as Chekhov and George Bernard Shaw.
Is there any indication that this has ever been performed?
According to all the scholars I spoke to, it has never, ever been performed. The wonderful thing about working with a lot of the William Faulkner scholars is that they're just a wonderful, wonderful group of people to work with. You can sort of get into, with other writers, into working with scholars that are very proprietary, very, very petty, very confrontational when you're trying to have something surface that's been lost for a long time. But I spoke to a lot of them, and they just were very encouraging, very supportive, and they were just very, very definitive that this was never, ever performed.
Tell us a little bit about the plot. Not a long play, and it has a twist at the end.
Yeah, it was interesting, and it was just a three-character play. It's about this this man who's trying to propose to this emancipated flapper, propose marriage, and before his proposal, he's chatting with his best friend about all of this, and they make a bet that his friend bets him $100 that she'll flat out reject him, and he hides behind the curtain while he's trying to propose to this wildly emancipated girl who smokes, drinks, and swears. There's a real twist at the end, and there's a bit of influence of Chekhov in that he also wrote a play. He wrote a short story called The Bet. And there's this theme that you can make a bet, and just because you're certain that you're going to win, there are a lot of unforeseen circumstances.
Which is presumably where we get the title, Twixt Cup and Lip.
Exactly. So there's a little bit of Shakespeare in that title as well.
You have rescued a lot of unpublished works from many of our major authors. Why is that important to you in your job?
Well, Ian, I was the dorky kid who, when I was 9 years old, would always be telling my mom things like, "Oh, if only I had a chance to talk to Robert Louis Stevenson about why and how he wrote Treasure Island." Or when I was a little older, it'd be like, "Oh, if I only could talk to H.G. Wells about how he came up with an idea like The Invisible Man." So, as odd as it sounds, I don't think I've grown up much from that. Probably a lot physically, I have. But I still am the type of person who wants to have that bond, that link with the past, with some of these great literary legends. So to me, it's just been a passion of mine to rescue these works and then just open up a box of magazines when they've come from the printer and just smell that ink and, most importantly, see something like F. Scott Fitzgerald, Tennessee Williams, Robert Louis Stevenson, John Steinbeck, H.G. Wells on the cover of the magazine. To me, it just doesn't get any better. A lot of times people are asking me, it must be so glamorous to publish a magazine. And I always tell them, you don't want to know how governments work and how sausages are made or magazines are published, because a lot of the time there's very, very little glamour. It's a very tedious job. But those moments when you uncover an unpublished manuscript by a writer and you see open the magazine up and have a feel for it, those moments make all the tedium worth it.
Do you ever wrestle with the question when going to print of whether the author, maybe it was unpublished for a reason, and maybe the author didn't intend to publish, such a work?
That's a great question, Ian, and it's something that you always wrestle with this dilemma when you get a work and you look at it and you think it's not going to add to the legacy of the author. When it comes to some scholars love to dig almost everything up and say, "Hey, look at what I found." And, they'll, of course, publish it in a literary journal, which will be read by a limited number of people. When you publish a consumer-based magazine, you need to make sure that all your readers are happy. You have to make sure that you don't get to a point where you have this great marquee and this great headline, and then people will open up the magazine and will say, "Oh my goodness, you mean Tennessee Williams wrote this?" And what can happen after that is people will not subscribe to the magazine, and worse still, I'll get an angry email which will ruin my morning. So in terms of a magazine, when you do publish something like this, it has to be read by everybody in the staff. They have to all be in agreement that this is something that will honor the memory and the legacy of a great writer. There have been several times, and more times than I'd care to admit, where I found a work by a literary legend and I've looked at it and I've said to myself, no, this person is too dear to me. Their memory is too dear to me to publish something where you know that this writer did not want this to see the light of day.
Okay, give me a cliffhanger. Last time I asked you what was up next, and I think at that time you must have had Faulkner in the works. What might we be talking about in another 6 months from now?
Another 6 months from now, we have a work by a major, major American literary giant. I found three stories of his, and I'm working with the literary estate and the family of the author to try to have it published in the Strand. And if that doesn't work, I have a short, eerie story by a British literary legend who lived in the 20th century. And that will definitely be published next year.
Andrew Gooley, with a keen eye for suspense, I guess it figures. He's the managing editor of The Strand magazine. And we were talking about a new one-act play by William Faulkner published in the latest issue. Always a pleasure to speak with you, Andrew. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Always good talking to you.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.